You are listening to a sermon podcast brought to you by Northminster Presbyterian Church of Greater Atlanta.
Oh, so familiar story, but yet I invite you to hear it with new and fresh ears. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the tomb. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and said to them, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." Then Peter and the other disciple set out and went toward the tomb. The two were running together, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent down to look in and saw the linen wrappings lying there, but he did not want to go in. Then Simon Peter came, following him, and went into the tomb. He saw the linen wrappings lying there, and the cloth that had been on Jesus' head, not lying with the linen wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then the other disciple, who reached the tomb first, also went in, and he saw and believed. For as yet they did not understand the scripture, that he must rise from the dead. Then the disciples returned to their homes. But Mary stood weeping outside the tomb. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had been lying, one at the head and the other at the feet. They said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "They have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." When she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you looking for?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Do not hold on to me, because I have not yet ascended to the Father. But go to my brothers and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went and announced to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord," and she told them that he had said these things to her. This is the word of the Lord.
When I came to Atlanta Presbytery, I met with the examinations committee, and one of the things they asked me is, what do you like to do? What do to take care of yourself or recharge your batteries, however you want to phrase it? And I run. I'm a runner. And I don't make that statement lightly because you thumb through running magazines or blogs, and there's some enthusiastic debate around when exactly you get to call yourself a runner. When you've notched off a certain number of miles, 1, 3, 5, 10, whatever it is. Or maybe it's the events, the size of the event, half marathon, marathon, or the number of events that you've done. Some people will claim you can't call yourself a runner until you've achieved some of these things. For me, I choose that definition for a much more personal reason, and it's simply that I enjoy it. I look forward to running. I look forward to those opportunities to run, and I'm disappointed when I miss those opportunities, and it certainly wasn't always that way. I grew up as a wrestler, and then you only run for one of two reasons, and one reason is that you did something wrong, and so you have to go run. And another reason is when you usually find yourself with three or four sweatshirts and garbage bags on you and that sort of thing, and you're running trying to shed that last quarter pound before a weigh-in. So running wasn't something that I always enjoyed, and certainly wasn't a title that I always gave myself as a runner. Now, people run for a lot of different reasons. Some people will run to lose some extra pounds. Some people will run to lose some stress. Some people will run to take a healthy break from reality and the demands that it places on you. And actually, for the last 3 years, we in this church have put together groups of people who have run together and run the formerly ING, now Publix, Georgia Marathon and Half Marathon, and we've managed to raise over $15,000 for various charities. And actually, there's another opportunity coming up in less than 2 weeks for Homestretch, an organization we work with. It's called Run the River. It is right down along the river. It's a nice flat course. There aren't many flat courses around Atlanta, so I highly recommend it. But we've put together these groups who have run together, and it's been a lot of fun. And 2 years ago, we were super organized, and we actually had T-shirts made. And that year, we were running for 65 Roses. It's an organization that raises money for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. So we had these put together, and we called ourselves Team Dean, in honor of the young man for whom we are running. You know, and I thought, you know, this is all a good thing, so there's nothing wrong with giving a little plug to the church, right? So I had our web address put on the back of the T-shirts as well. And I was pretty excited about that until one of our runners, Tim Thomas, said to me, "You know, Patrick, your entire marketing strategy is based on the assumption that someone will actually be behind us." And I told him I was actually taking a bit more of a survivalistic approach to it. I mean, my thought was that when someone passed me and saw me laying face down in the street, that they would know where to return the body, you know? Now, I got to tell you, if you've never participated in a running event, I highly recommend it. And if running simply absolutely isn't your thing, it's something you can't do, whatever, all of these events rely on volunteer support. And I strongly recommend then that you volunteer, because these events, they're just a sight to behold. And it is really something to be out there and to see all these people. I mean, this year there are over 14,000 runners, and it's just amazing. It's amazing to see all the different kinds of people that are out there. You know, there are some people that, when you look at them, I mean, you can see that this is exactly what God had created them to do. You know, these are the people who on their race bib, there's only one number. You know, they got like a 3. They're not like 8,105 like me, you know. I mean, but you look at them and this is what God had created them to do. This is the way their body is supposed to move. You know, and like any skill, I mean, when you see someone who's really good at something doing that thing, it's a sight to behold. But even then, aside from that, I mean, you have people out there for whom it is not their body, not their legs, but their head and their heart and their will that is allowing their body to move through this. You see diabetics out there. You see single leg amputees. In this last race, there was a double leg amputee. blind runners out who are partnering with someone as they run through the course. It's amazing to see all the different, you know, sizes and ages and shapes of people that are out there and able to make this accomplishment. You know, and even in the more, like, you know, general population, for lack of a better term, you know, I mean, I'll be out there and I'll get into my groove and I'll be feeling pretty good about myself, you know, because I just passed a group of college kids, you know. Never mind the fact that they didn't sleep at all the night before, but I passed them. And, you know, and I'm running tall and I'm feeling good. And then, you know, like a mile later, I get dusted by Uncle Jesse from the Dukes of Hazzard, you know. And like white beard just slapping me in the face as he passes me. You know, he's even got the overalls and boots on, but he's just gone. It's something. Now, this last one that we did when we ran for Team World Vision, it was on March 18th, and St. Patrick's Day weekend, and it was a beautiful day. Now, what happens at bigger events like this is they take your picture when you cross the finish line. And that's something to remember, because it doesn't matter what you've done for the last 13 or 26 miles. I mean, you want to be like, hey. You know, I mean, you want to make sure that you're standing up, that you're smiling and all that sort of thing. It doesn't matter how miserable you feel, you stand up straight. And so I was finishing my race and I was feeling good. And I'm coming down like that last 100 yards. And then it hits me, you know what? Oh, that's right. I better, you know, perk up a little bit. They're going to be taking my picture soon. And I look around me, and right in front of me is a woman with a shamrock tutu on and little bouncy shamrock antenna celebrating St. Patrick's Day. And I'm thinking, you know what? Uh-uh. I cannot finish behind this. And so I dial it up a notch, and a lot of people will make fun of you for doing that in the last stretch of the race. You know, I mean, you've been slogging it out for a couple hours, but you're going to make a huge difference in the last 30 seconds, right? But I did, because I was not finishing behind this person. And so I passed her. But what I didn't realize in my whole thought process was that I didn't pass her enough. Because what this picture is going to show is me with her right behind me. And so, you know, my only image of this race then is going to be Patrick Day, slightly faster than a leprechaun. These things are humbling and inspiring all at the same time. Now, there's a foot race in our gospel story this morning. There's actually more running in this one chapter than you see in the rest of the gospel. Mary comes to the tomb and she finds that it's empty, so she runs. She runs to get Simon, Peter, and John. And she tells them what happened, and Peter and John take off running, because they want to see what it is that she's just told them. And this, to me, is where it gets funny, because if you'll notice, Peter and John take off running together. They don't get there together. And I don't know if maybe Peter's older, if he's bigger, if he just hasn't taken quite as good a care of himself as he should, or I don't know what the story is, but I mean, they take off together, but they don't get there together. John gets there first. And he stops, though, once he gets there, and he kind of looks in, but he won't go in. And now when Peter catches up, you know, and Peter is all passion. I mean, there's no filter in Peter. There's no throttle. If Peter has a thought in his head, it comes out his mouth. And so, I mean, here's the image I have, you know. I mean, here comes Peter, and he's like, you know, but he's got the momentum going, right? So when he gets to the opening of that tomb, he ain't stopping, you know. So he's just like, whoo, oh, man. And he's in there. And John's waiting at the door. And after John sees Peter go in, then he goes in. And they look around. And they believe. Now, burial practices were different then. And so it helps to kind of understand exactly what it is that they're looking at in there. Because it's not that the tomb is empty. It's not completely empty. But instead, when they took a dead body, they would wrap it up. And they would have a cloth for their head. And so what these two guys are actually seeing is that the cloth is still there. The bands that the body was wrapped in, they're all still there. And forgive the analogy, but it's almost like if you take a balloon and you blow up the balloon and you tie a knot in it and you set it down and now it's inflated, it's filled with air. But you go back 3 days later and the balloon's empty. The knot's still tied in it. There's no hole, but it's empty. That's what they're seeing when they go in. So the cloth and the burial rags and everything, they're all still there as though they had wrapped a body, but the body is no longer in the rags. And they saw. And they believed. Now, some people, when they're learning about the Christian faith, or maybe they've grown up in it, but now are you know, formulating their own opinions and ideas, they hear this story and they think it's just too hard to believe that Jesus would be raised from the dead. It's an unbelievable story. But I wonder sometimes if it's the story that may prevent us from believing, or if it's something in us that's getting in the way. I mean, truly, you read the story, and all kidding aside, I mean, Peter and John, they take off for the tomb together, but they don't get there together. And I do wonder why it took Peter longer to get there than John. Was he just slower? Or maybe some thoughts started coming back into Peter's mind. Maybe Peter started thinking about the time just a couple days ago when Jesus told him, "You will deny that you ever even knew me." And Peter promised him, looked him in the eye and said, "Absolutely, I will not." And then three different times while Jesus was on trial, someone looked at Peter and they said, "You're one of his followers, aren't you?" And he said, "I am not." "You're with that man, aren't you?" "I am not." In another one of the Gospels, he even says to someone, he goes, "I've told you, I do not know that man." Maybe it's not Peter's legs that are slowing him down. Maybe it's his memory. Maybe he's not so sure that he wants to see what he was just told about. Maybe we come to the story like that. Like Peter. Thinking, you know what? I can't believe. Because I'm not good enough for this. If you knew some of the things that I've done in my life, then this whole good news and new life and new creation, you'd want to keep it to yourself. You wouldn't want to offer it to me. I don't deserve this. Then you have John. John is so eager. He beats Peter to the tomb. But what does he do when he gets there? He does. He stops at the door. And he doesn't go in because he's afraid. Maybe we come to this story like John. We're afraid. Because if I believe this, if I believe that this tomb is empty, if I believe that he has been raised from the dead as he promised, if I believe in this whole new life for me, then what else do I have to believe? Maybe I have to believe that that group of people that I've done such a good job of hating all these years, maybe I end up having to believe that they're pretty decent human beings. Maybe if I believe in this new life, then I'm going to have to believe that I was not just put on this planet for the pursuit of my own happiness. Maybe I'll have to believe that I was called to help and to serve others. Maybe if I believe in this, if I believe in this new life and all the things that he's been saying, then maybe I'm going to have to believe that it really doesn't matter what kind of car I drive, what club I belong to, or what clothes I wear. And that's a frightening prospect. You know, the thing is, when you take a runner who started running to shed a few pounds, what you find, though, is they may begin by running away from something. Once they see what it does for them, see how it makes them feel, not just physically, but emotionally and spiritually. What you find is that they get to a point, they're no longer running from something, they're running to something. They're running to a new way of feeling, a new way of thinking, a new way of believing about who they are in this world. And it's the same way in our gospel passage. Once you run in there like Peter, or take those steps in like John and do what they did, believed. Then you find that you're not leaving something. But you're going to something. You're stepping in to an understanding that offers a different vision for this world. You're stepping into a view of this world that is actually filled with hope, a world that is filled with peace for all people. All people. That's what the prophet Isaiah said. All people. When you take those steps in, you're not stepping away from something anymore, but you're stepping to something. And when you are ready to do that, you are ready to be part of this magnificent story that God is writing in your life. Amen.
Thank you for listening. listening today. If you want to learn more about Northminster Presbyterian Church, visit us online at northminster-atl.org.